Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Live. This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach and Gus. Let's take a look back at last week. 17-19 loss to the Ravens. You guys dropped to 0-3. What do you talk to your team about after a game like that? Tough loss.
Yeah, it was a tough loss. You know, you have an opportunity, a couple opportunities, really, to close out the game, get a field goal or a touchdown in the last 5 minutes of the game, and we didn't meet those needs. And, you know, so that was a challenge to bring him back from that. Obviously, there were some good things. We saw progression in our defense, our special teams, but the offensive side of the ball is really where we're focusing our attention. But every week is different. Defense is going to have some great challenges this week, as well as special teams. All three phases need to work together.
The quarterback struggling. Interceptions, had three of them in the game, and obviously the one at the end, not a big deal. You're trying to make something happen. Where's he at?
Well, he's doing good. You know, I think that you're right. The one at the end, and, you know, there's a couple batted balls that we took a look at this week. So, you know, it comes back to just being in a good rhythm from start to finish. His accuracy, I think, last week was 63%. You know, that overall is better. You know, his decision-making and his understanding of the protection. So we're seeing really good signs from him, and that's what we need to continue to build on. We're having some chances at some explosive plays, and we're just not hitting those, and that's the difference. I think when you have explosive plays within a series, you get a chance to score more points. So we'll continue to do that, have great deal of confidence in them.
Is it frustrating because, you know, in the preseason, you guys were talking about fast starts, running the football, and it looked good. You know, the Jets game, very, very good. The Cincinnati Bengals game, not so good. But overall, you could feel that trending offense working to that fashion. And then it didn't show up last week. How do you kind of get the focus back to that? Is it just the conversation and continuing to work?
Well, and that's what we've had a lot of conversation this week about with our coaches. You know, we had Monday afternoon and you know, after we watched the film and presented it to the players, and Tuesday, and have had great conversations. Go back and look at all the runs, what we did in the preseason compared to now, and why were we effective then and not so effective now. So, you know, I think it's led us to a better place. We have a good plan going into this week.
Chris Ivory returned. A lot of people were expecting, hey, look, you know, because at the beginning, everybody was cheering very loudly when Chris Ivory got introduced. And I don't want to say that he was going to be a savior, but people expected him to help, but it didn't help. The offensive line changes, how much did that have to do with the ineffectiveness of the running game?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, Chris Ivory and TJ, we feel very strongly about. At times, they made something out of nothing, you know, and got some yards for us. So, you know, I think they understand that it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a 3-yard gain, a 4-yard gain, a 5-yard gain. And then you hope into the second half, as you continue to stay committed to it, that you see those runs break out. So, you know, that's the important part of it. But, you know, we just need to work well together. I know we had two new guys in there, but like I said last week, before they're in there, they've been in the system, they understand the scheme, and they have to perform as everybody.
How is the health of Kelvin Beachum and Brandon Linder at this early juncture of the week?
It's good. You know, we'll continue to work day to day. Kelvin Beachum should be in pretty good shape. And with Linder, it's just, you know, how he feels and how he can perform. So the week of practice is so important for him, and we'll take every day that we can up to Sunday.
Going back to the game defensively, I thought you guys played very well. Faced an offense that likes to run the football, likes to take shots. You didn't give up very many explosive plays, and I'm not sure the exact number, and gave your team an opportunity there at the end. But is it frustrating for them not seeing the results or the benefit from that?
No, I think our defense takes on the personality, just like our whole team, that, you know, they're looking at what else can we do? What more can we do? And if we want to be a very good defense, what steps do we need to take? So, that's every team I've been a part of, that's how it's operated. You know, they really look at what can they add to the team to help us initially get that first win.
Turnover differential is always critical in determining the outcomes of ball games. You guys, what, were even in this game, is that right?
Right.
Even? And two takeaways on defense, one on special teams. The three interceptions negated and kind of made that even. As a defense, you got to be happy to see that, because in the first couple games, they weren't coming. You know, I always say they come in bunches, and they came in this game.
Yeah, and it's so true. I think when you're seeing, I think our two edge rushers, along with Malik and the inside, are doing a good job getting pressure on the quarterback. You're starting to see them, you know, getting more and more pressure, playing more and more consistently. So, you know, that's a good sign. We had a tip pass, you know, hitting the quarterback's arm in the throwing motion that allowed Puz to get the interception. We had a run reach, you know, by Yannick where the ball was on the ground. We didn't get that. So as that rush improves, it should help the back end.
Let's talk about those guys for a minute. Let's start with Malik Jackson. I thought it was his best game yet. You know, the one play that people really probably didn't notice, they noticed the play, but they didn't notice the play of Malik Jackson on it, was the throw in which Jalen Ramsey reaches out and he tips that ball to Sean Gibson, which results in the interception. But you got to start it up front because Malik is working against Marshall Yanda, five consecutive Pro Bowls. He beats him and is in the face of Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, who's coming back from an ACL, doesn't want to step forward with that throw, and then the ball sails high and to the right, giving Jalen that opportunity. It started with Malik.
Well, it did, and Malik has been playing pretty well each game, and I think as he gets more and more comfortable with what we're asking him to do, you're starting to see him flourish. But providing that push, beating one-on-one, you know, with the guards, you're starting to show up there. So anytime you get that kind of push, it helps on the perimeter as well. So, you know, we need to continue that progress. But like you said, it helps on the back end. All of a sudden, those tips and overthrows, those missed passes create opportunities for interceptions.
And then he had a sack earlier in the ball game, a very nice play where he read it, you know, guard pulls, and all of a sudden he's feeling pass and he gets up the field. I mean, that's a heck of a play by him as well.
Yeah, and you know, some of the same things that we saw on tape last year, you're starting to see here.
With the outside guys, I want to point to one specific play, and it was Dante Fowler when he hits Joe Flacco's arm, and a lot of people say, well, that's a great play, which it is. What impressed me the most about that play was here's a young player that's learning how to pass rush. And the way he set that pass rush up, it looked like it was a plan to where he up the field, a little shimmy to the inside, and then come back outside with a rip. That looked like a polished pass rush move instead of just an athlete trying to rush.
Well, he's just made great strides since training camp. I know that. You remember we were talking about that Tampa Bay, you know, inner squad, you know, a couple days.
He got humbled a little bit.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. But you know, really, the work that he put in and how he studied, and it's hard this league to rush against the tackles that we're seeing, and it takes some time. So it's good to see that these two guys are maturing rapidly and they push one another. You know, and I think that part of the competition is great for us.
Competition is good now.
It's very good.
It's very good. And because the competition, whether you know they want to admit it or not, and Ngakoue and him are playing the same position when it's base downs, and then when you get the nickel, they're both obviously on the field. But with Yannick, I love watching him because not very many young pass rushers have the awareness about where the ball is. It takes them usually a year or two or 3 years to figure that out, whereas Yannick has the awareness on the ball.
Yeah, and he showed that in college. I mean, he was one of the top sack getters in college football last year. So, you know, you hope that that transfers over to the pro level. You just don't know how fast it will transfer over. And the challenge for both those guys is as they put more tape out there and tackles start to try to understand what their games are and how they're doing it, they got to fight through that battle as well.
Paul Posluszny, what do you say besides one heck of a ball game?
It is. You know, and Puz, the way we see him in practice, I mean, that's what we see every day. He's a playmaker. He gets our defense lined up. They respond to him. He's a great leader. And you're seeing that same production on game day.
Telvin Smith, is it fair to say, and I don't want you giving out awards or anything, but is he playing maybe the best on defense or certainly the best you've ever seen out of him?
He is playing at a high level. And, you know, I think it's cool to see is some of the struggles he went through in training camp. You know, that Jets game. And, you know, but that's what he really give credit to Telvin. He learned from those opportunities that he had. He got him out of his game, and now he's playing at a really high level.
Special teams, kind of back and forth a little bit. Would you give that kind of an even grade in this game?
You know, I thought we did good. You know, we talk about setting up scores. And, you know, that's a challenge for a special teams unit. But we had a 42-yard punt return by Rashad, set up a score. Denard Robinson recovered a fumble, set up a score. So those are all really, really good signs. The initial kick return where we fumbled the ball, Regis Ben made a great job recovering it. That's something that we got to take a look at and make sure, you know, we're fortunate in that aspect. But the one that stung us was the blocked field goal.
Go to that, back to that one for a minute. From watching the tape, Jason Myers had an extra point that was early in the ball game that looked a little bit low, and it started out a little left. And then watching the block field goal, it kind of looked the same. It looked like it started left, and it looked low. What are your thoughts on that?
Well,
was it too low?
Yeah. No, we had some penetration there, you know, and they did a good job with their penetration over a gap. And, you know, he extended his arm, and it has some distance on it. So the big coaching point this past week with our special teams unit was that we need to get the ball up because they did have great push with their field goal block team. So, you know, it's hard to see. I know what you're talking about when you look at it from the end zone angle. And sometimes the camera angle can, shift your focus or really doesn't give you the true picture. But, both those things, though, we need to take a look at, make sure the ball gets up, and our protection has got to be on.
Yeah, because sometimes when you watch a kicker, I mean, that ball may start left, but then all of a sudden, you know, that English on the ball or the spin of the ball kind of brings it right back.
Right.
It's hard to tell sometimes. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. More with the head coach right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. This segment is brought to you by Beard Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Gus, this week, traveling to London the fourth time. What have you learned that's the most important thing in your mind from the previous three trips?
Well, I think, you know, we've done it in three different ways. We left on a Sunday, we left on a Monday, we left on a Thursday, really to give us an idea. We knew that we were going to make in this trip for some years, so we wanted to take advantage of it and see how the players respond. And once we got there, how we play in the game, how their bodies felt. So I think, you know, we're coming back to the Thursday. Obviously, we felt like that was the best for our players. But, you know, it is. It's a long trip, and to make sure that they come out of it healthy, and healthy and feeling good going in the game is so important.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was so excited that you guys won last year and we left on a Thursday.
Well, you know what? I think
it's a long trip if you leave. Like, you know, in previous years you leave on a Sunday or you leave on a Monday,
right,
to be gone for 9 days.
There's advantages of both. When you get there on a Monday, you're there as a whole team. There's no distractions. Builds great team camaraderie. So there's that aspect too. But, with our team, just the travel and how they got out the plane to when we went in practice, you could just tell, I think, how we responded the best was to go out there on a Thursday.
Your team sits at 0-3 right now. Can a road trip, even though this is considered a home game, can a road trip be good for a team? Because, you know, you talk about that circle the wagons mentality. I don't want to call it a circle the wagons mentality, but to pack the wagons up and go somewhere maybe.
Well, I think, you know, every opportunity that comes up, you know, this game is so much about us and what we do. We had a couple opportunities in our past game. We had a couple opportunities in our first game, and we're not taking advantage of those. And that's what it's all about, and that's the message to the team. It was on Monday. It'll continue throughout the week. So we got another opportunity on Sunday, and we got to take advantage of that opportunity. So whether we're at home, away, this is the one that we have in front of us.
You talked earlier in the week about watching the film, and as a team, you said you had about a 60-play film session with the football team. What kind of plays do you show in a session like that? Is it plays that, hey, look, these are good, these are things we need to improve on? Because, I mean, 60 is a high number of plays. I mean, most sides of the ball have about 60 each, so you had a lot of plays to show the team.
Right, and we do that every week. You know, we talk about that, and, you know, the accountability is such a big part of it. And I think it was sometimes the offense doesn't see all the defensive plays, defense doesn't see all the offense because we split up so much. So we just want to take advantage of that time to really give all three phases a chance to look at the tape and see what each side of the ball is going through. And to point out, there are some positives, there are some things that we need to correct individually, and there are some things that we need to correct situationally. And I think all three of those things were emphasized in that meeting.
You know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, as a coach, you know, he needs to get his players to do this. And a coach, a lot of times, if he's true to himself, will say, what can I do better? What can my staff do better? And I'm sure you've done that.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's where it should start. You know, I think what you see is what you coach. So if you see some things out on the field that you don't like that aren't really to your level of approval, then you got to take a look at coaching. And we got to look at how we're presenting it, how we're getting the information to the players, and how it's being performed out in the field. So you always look at yourself first as well as challenge the players.
All right, let's look specifically at the running game. It's not one area, right? I mean, it's because, you know, when I watch the film, and I don't know the exact scheme of how things are going to be, but it appears that at times it might be this position or this block, or it could, you know, what I say is, it's, I don't want to say it's a merry-go-round, but it's not one area, is it?
Well, I mean, when you have conversations like this, it's difficult because I understand what you're asking, but we're also trying to protect what we're doing and where we're trying to go. So, you know, without giving out too much information, you're right. I think it's the consistency. I'll try to be as broad as I can to protect us, but there's some consistency things that we need to work on. I think that you go back and you reflect, you look at, you know, maybe past successes and, you know, preseason games and things like that. What was so significant then that we're not doing now? And you just try to take a look at everything. You look at position, you look at players, you look at how we're coaching it, you look at scheme. And, because those things, you can look at changing. Those things you can look at adapting, and that's what we did this past week.
A lot of people want to say, well, if the way you're running the football, the style that you're running the football will change it. And a lot of people, they're talking specifically about scheme. That's not easy to do, is it? You're talking about changing something maybe that you've worked on all offseason to go to a different, completely different style. That's not an option, is it?
No. I mean, you just look at what you're doing, and then you have to do it better. And, that's what we really put our focus on.
Blake Bortles, a boost to the running game would help him tremendously. But how is his mindset after a game like that? Because, you know, when you listen to him in his press conference, he's taken all of the blame. You know, and as a quarterback, you're the face of the franchise. But at the same token, as a head coach, you don't want him to feel the weight of a franchise on his shoulders.
No. You know what? And Blake, when you say, how's Blake doing? Well, he's doing the same as every other member of our team. You know, when you go out there and have an opportunity like we had and you miss it, it hurts. And you reflect back and you look at what you could have done better. How can we change this? So he's no different than anybody else. The quarterback position, by the nature of the position, you accept criticism and you deflect praise. And Blake Bortles is a stand-up guy, and he's going to accept it. And, just like the head coach has to accept it and any member of our team when it's due. And, so he just is a great leader. I think that's why this team respects him so much, because he is a stand-up guy, even when it's not warranted. You know, some things maybe are coming his way that we all can take, partial ownership in it.
One of the reasons why he was elected captain, right?
It is. You know, he's a strong presence in our locker room, but there's a great deal of confidence with Blake Bortles. I know from myself, from our coaching staff, and our team.
You always talk about controlling anxiety. Do you talk to Blake and make sure that anxiety is not creeping in?
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about that, we know it's a pressure situation to play in the NFL. And, our focus is just control the things that you can control. That in itself will limit some of the anxiety. And because he feels like, okay, these things I can correct, or as a team, these things we can correct. Where the anxiety comes in is when they're challenged on things that they can't control. And so we try to stay away from that part of it. But there's a lot of pressure added to our team as far as challenging on things they can control. And they expect that being an NFL player.
You talked earlier about the defense taking steps forward, which they clearly did in this ball game. Special teams taking some steps up in this ball game. Todd Walsh, do you see him taking steps up in his game as well? Because, you know, that was basically his third game as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I've always had great confidence in Todd. And I think, you know, people have asked, how do you think he'll call a game? We have constant communication during the game. And, we talk through things. But he's done a great job leading this group. And really all the defensive coaches. But it really comes back to the players, too. You know, the players executing on the field, understanding the game plan, and going out there and playing with a great deal of confidence. And I've seen the players really take ownership of that. Now the challenge, every week, because it's week-to-week league, and you got to show up every week.
You talk about players taking ownership. Me and you have had conversations before about accountability, and that the greatest thing in the world to see is when it comes to accountability is that it doesn't come from the coaches all the time. Coaches are always going to hold players accountable. But when it starts to come from within, players holding other players accountable on a consistent basis, are you starting to see that occur with your football
team?
It
is. It comes when they have a great understanding of the defense, a great understanding of the offense or special teams assignments they have to do. And when they have a great understanding, you'll see them branch off and not only their self, what their assignments are, but when they know what everybody else's assignments are. It's a point that you brought up with the 60-play cut-up. That's why we have defensive unit meetings, offensive unit meetings, so everybody's in there so they understand what everybody's responsibility is. And once they own that part of it, they can start holding each other more accountable. And sure, you're right, the coaches do it, the players are doing it, and it's starting to spread, you know, really throughout the whole organization. So that's always a good sign.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back more with the head coach right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logman alongside the head coach Gus. Next up on the plate this week in London, the Indianapolis Colts. They fell to the Detroit Lions 35-19 and the Denver Broncos 20-34. But last week they had a big win against San Diego at home in which their offense, Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton connected on a big play. What are you seeing about them as a team overall?
Well, they're a team similar to us in that they want to try to establish the run. They're trying to get Frank Gore more touches. And again, it just opens up some opportunities in the passing game with them. So Frank Gore, obviously, is where it starts with the run game. But then, obviously, the two big players, Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. Those are the guys that make him go. Andrew Luck in the passing game, the ability to extend plays, and T.Y. Hilton's speed on the perimeter. He's a guy that can get over 150 yards and a couple touchdowns in a hurry.
And they have a coordinator that last year, I guess, kind of was transitioned to that role in Chudzinski. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Rob Chudzinski. Do you see more of his fingerprints on this offense now that he's had time to install exactly what
he
wants?
Well, you saw a little bit of a change from when he took over when Pep was there. But you're right. Now that they've had a training camp and an off season, similar philosophies, you know, how to attack offenses and the types of styles of passes that you see. And that's so important with Andrew. You know, I know he has his style of passes he likes, and I think Chud brought that over and, you know, kept those aspects, but also added some things to the run game.
Andrew Luck last year played, I think, 7 games, ended up not finishing the year out because he had a lacerated kidney and a partially torn abdomen. That's not easy for anybody to overcome, and you would think that a quarterback that is overcoming that might not look quite the same yet. How has he looked, though?
I think he looks good. You know, I think of the Denver game where he had a couple long throws and big passes, and they tried to hit a deep one to Dorsett on a post route. So you're seeing a lot of the same things of Andrew Luck. His poise, his composure, you'd think he'd be a little bit more nervous in the pocket, still extend plays, still will run, you know, based on if no one's open and they're playing a two-man type concept. So you're seeing a lot of the same traits that he had before the injury.
A 93.2 rating, that's pretty good. What's better than that is a 6-year, $140 million extension. The guy got paid, and if there was ever a player watching in the National Football League that I just never would imagine that's affected by money, it would be Andrew Luck, because it just doesn't seem to be in his physical makeup, and it's showing.
No, I mean, football is obviously very important to him. He wants to be a great player in this league, and everything I hear about him, his work ethic, how he prepares, it's well-warranted.
They have a running back that's getting up there in age, 12th year, Frank Gore, 185 yards and a touchdown that he has right now in the year. But last week against the Chargers looked very good, averaged about 4 yards a carry, had a touchdown. Look like the Frank Gore of old.
He does. You know, and I think every year you come back and you watch Frank Gore, you think you're going to see a slower Frank Gore. Maybe the age has caught up to him. But that's not the case. He takes such great care of his body. You understand how he works out in the off season. But his instincts, I think he's got really good patience, really good instincts, and it serves him well.
He runs low. You know, when you watch him on film, he's low, and he always gains the sneaky yards because of just subtle moves. here and there.
Well, he's always been a really good gap runner, you know, whether it's power or counter plays with pullers. And he just, like, that again, that patience that he has. But they're running some zone schemes now, too, as well. And with those, I think he's getting a good feel for it. You know, he's just got really good instincts.
The backup running back that they acquired from the Seattle Seahawks. You Turbin. Familiar with him,
yeah.
Robert Turbin?
Yeah, Robert Turbin.
Was he there in Seattle when
yeah.
you were there?
Big, strong back, can really run. We looked for him to get some opportunities on third down, short yardage. But he's got tremendous speed for him. And I know they really like his presence. I think they picked him up last year.
The Colts' offensive line in years past has been much debated, especially when you have a franchise quarterback go down with injuries like Andrew Luck went down last year. The general manager, Ryan Grigson, invested 4 draft picks along the offensive line, and 2 of them are playing right now. At center, you have Ryan Kelly, who was the first-round pick out of Alabama, and Joe Haig. Is it Haig? You should know how to pronounce yeah. that now, right?
Yeah, North Dakota State guy.
Yeah. How do those two guys look? Because they're playing.
Yeah, the center's doing a really good job for him. I mean, there's a reason why he was a first-round pick. I know when we evaluated, we really liked him. And so I think he's really stepped in that spot and gave him kind of a sense of security throughout the line. So their offense line does a good job. I think that they protected a little bit with some max protection shots for him to help with the protection. But overall, I think the more and more, you know, from where they were the first game to the San Diego game, seeing great progress.
And they had some issues last week against San Diego. Joe Wright's ended up coming out, and they had to reshuffle some guys around. I'm sure you guys, do you watch the injury report with a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. So you get one every day of the week, you know, when they practice, and you know what took place in the game before, so you see how they're responding during the week.
All right, we come back. I want to talk about matchups because, you know what, as matchups go, the defensive linemen, you know, I'm watching the injury report. I want to see who I'm going to play, but I also wonder who my coach is going to put me up against. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, and we were talking before the break about matchup. How do you determine, for example, the Colts offensive line, let's say they've got to shuffle some guys, or even if they don't, and you're looking at your guys and Yannick Ngakoue and Dante Fowler, how do you determine which side they may go or which side a defensive tackle may rush from? Is it about strength versus weakness?
Well, yeah, you take a look at where your players usually rush from and how comfortable they are and what they can give to your team as far as the rush. And you're right, matchups are involved. You take a look at them. So they have a chance to study these guys throughout the week and get a feel for how they're going to try to, you know, protect against them.
And the matchup that I'm sure a lot of your defensive backs are looking forward to, T.Y. Hilton. Watching him in that Chargers game last week, he had some conversations with his teammates because they lost a wide receiver, and he said he was going to step up, and boy, did he ever step up. The 63-yard game-winning touchdown that he had was simply fantastic by him.
Yeah, it was a great play. You know, it's like a deep slant and broke a play and turned into a long gain for him. And that's what guys do like that. That's why he's such a big impact player for them. He has the ability to take a short gain, make it a big gain. He can take a big gain and turn it into a bigger gain. And so they try to get him the ball in a variety of ways. So different styles, different types of passes that he can run. He can play in the slot. He can play in the perimeter. So they move him around quite a bit.
He had 8 catches for 174 yards and a touchdown, and he told his teammates he was going to have a buck. I think he went a little bit over a buck, so pretty impressive by him. Dante Moncrief, inactive against the Chargers. He has a fractured scapula. He's going to be out for some time. They involve the tight ends more. What does that mean for your defense if they're going to go more tight ends, and do you expect to see that this week?
Well, you know, once they get to 3 wides, you make a decision. Do you want to stay in base, or do you want to go in nickel? And it's the same thing in 12 personnel. You know, 1 back, 2 tight ends in the game. So you determine, you know, how they want to play it, what type of game do they want to play out of that personnel group. And then, you know, you get your personnel in based on the tendencies that you have.
And the 2 tight ends that they play, Dwayne Allen. I don't know about you guys. I've been a fan of his for a long time because they had Kobe Fleener there and then Dwayne Allen. They were in the same draft class. Kobe Fleener was the higher pick. But Dwayne Allen I always liked because he would do everything. He would block. He would receive. Wasn't a, you know, Jimmy Graham type of tight end, but certainly a very good receiving tight
end. He is. I think you really, you know, showcase what he can do. He can be an inline blocker. He can be flexed out and operate in some space. Does a good job. He's a tight end that can run deeper developing routes. And, you know, he really stands out to you. You see why with the loss to Moncrief, why they went to a little bit two more two tight end sets.
All right, let's flip over to the other side of the ball. The Colts defense have a new coordinator this year, Ted Monachino. A lot of Jaguar fans might know him. He spent some time here as a defensive line coach. Most recently, I believe, was with the Ravens as their outside linebackers coach. Comes from that 3-4 system. Obviously, the head coach Pagano came from Baltimore. Ted comes from Baltimore most recently. What are you seeing the characteristics that he has put on that defense?
Well, I think it's influenced heavily by Chuck. I think that Chuck has a style of play that he wants for the defense. I think he has a system that he's employed. But then now Ted has brought his own flavor. You know, he was with Baltimore for some years. So some of the things that you see, what we saw this past week, will show up again. I think they're going to stay true to who they are in some of the past coverages that they use and some of the games. But Ted will add his own identity to the game.
There's been a lot of talk about how bad of a defense that they are, but they played well against San Diego.
Well, they had a lot of injuries early in the season. They had some in training camp, and they felt like towards the end of September they would try to get, you know, hopefully get everybody back. And I think you saw quite a few guys come back for that San Diego game, and they did. They played at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, overall, 400 yards a game they've given up, and who came back this past week? Vontae Davis on the outside. How important is he to a defense like that? Because a couple years ago, I think he was rated as the best cover corner in the National Football League.
Well, it just gives you really good flexibility. You know, some teams are split safety teams, and they'll keep a safety back to try to protect the corner at times to give him a little bit help. But when you got a guy like Davis in there, it allows the safety to get more into the box to help on the run game.
And they recently had signed Antonio Cromartie, who longtime New York Jet, bounced around the league for a little bit most recently. We saw him against the New Orleans Saints. He's on their roster. The couple other injuries that they have, Patrick Robinson, he's typically the starting left corner. He hasn't been inactive or wasn't active last week. Also, Darius Butler. That's not easy to overcome in the National Football League, is when all of a sudden you might be missing three starters in the secondary.
Yeah, it is tough because they need to play as a unit and understand that. So I know there's talk about getting all those guys back. Like I mentioned before, the end of September, they're hoping to be a more healthy team. But they play with a lot of energy on defense. They play with a lot of energy, and their linebackers are doing some good things. Their secondary has improved. So, you know, we understand by watching them on tape what we're up against.
All right, to talk specifically about one of those linebackers, C.O. Moore has jumped out in my eyes watching him on film.
Yeah, you know what? We looked at C.O. when he was at UConn. And, you know, a heavy hitter, you know, big, strong, heavy-handed type linebacker for him. Moves pretty well in space. I know he was with Oakland. I think they made the trade for him to get him over to Indy just to try to get younger there. But he's done a nice job for him.
All right, we come back, we'll talk about the guys up front. A little longer in tooth up front. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show alongside the head coach and Gus, the guys up front for the Colts defense. The first name that pops out is Robert Mathis, and he's obviously getting long in tooth. Is he still an effective player?
Yeah, he is. You know, I think as you go and get more experience in the league and you've seen a lot of things, obviously, I don't know how many sacks he has. It's quite a few.
Career?
Yeah.
118.
There you go. 118 sacks. I mean, you're doing a lot of good things. So he just has such a good understanding of tackles and how they play him and what they're doing and how to attack him. And I think when you have an experienced guy like that, it spreads throughout the whole defensive line, and it just elevates them. So he has that kind of an impact.
They had a couple experienced guys, but the other guy ended up, I think, on injured reserve this week, and that's Trent Cole, 12th-year outside linebacker. They kind of rotated. He had 88.5 career sacks. But to continue along the front, one of the guys that impressed me last year, and we'll get to both of them here in a minute, the Stanford guys, but we'll start at the nose tackle. David Perry is a fireplug in the middle. He looks like he's about 5'9 and 300 pounds, but because he's just so thick, he's just a big block nose tackle.
He is. You know, and he's a first and second down type player for them. So he comes in and runs situations, you know, and does a good job. When you have that style of nose guard, it forces double teams. It forces you to hang on him a little bit longer because he can be disruptive.
And the guy that he came out and was in the draft class last year from Stanford, coming back from a knee injury, Henry Anderson. He only had 18 snaps this past game. But I don't want to say that he's J.J. Watt, but he's got some of those measurables, the height, the length, and he makes good plays.
I know, he's one of your favorites. I know we talked about him last year. You really liked just the way he played and how he went out there, and he is. You're right. He didn't have as many snaps this past week. We look for that to keep increasing as he gets comfortable. It's always tough to come back from an injury like that, so I'm sure they're bringing him along slowly to help him gain his confidence.
All right, the guy that had a big game last week against the Chargers, outside linebacker Eric Walden, had two sacks, two caused fumbles. He is a physical presence. You better – what I call him, he's a double chin strap player.
Right, and that's why film is so important. You really got to take a look at his style. How is he getting the pressures? Because it's a different style than maybe what our players have been accustomed to seeing. So a different style for him, but he's been effective. And like you said, he's got a couple sacks under his name.
Now, the one thing that also kind of surprised me, the Colts, they play a lot of guys on defense, you know, whether it be frontline guys, linebackers, they're rolling a lot of guys in.
They are. When we went through our preliminary scouting report, you know, that was what was brought up to us, that they're not afraid to play a lot of guys, keep guys fresh. You know, like you said, some guys have been playing quite a bit in the league, so it's important to rotate them so they can play at a high level, especially on third down.
You looking forward to getting to this ball game?
Oh, I am. You know, we've got, you know, still some work to do, but it's been a good week so far. And, you know, to travel, get to London, and proceed from there, it is. It's a great environment out there. Our fans have been great out there. They welcome us. So, I mean, it's a great experience for our players.
How much interaction opportunities do you even get, though, when you get to London?
Well, it's a little bit tougher now that we get out there on a Thursday. When we were out there on a Monday or a Sunday, we had a little bit more interaction. But we'll still have opportunities. There'll be something going on for us on Saturday for our players to get a feel for London and the atmosphere around the game.
You know, when you travel to London, we've talked in the past about sometimes road trips can be good for team bonding. How about for coaches bonding?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're pretty much together all the time anyway. So
you get to the point where you're just like, you know, I don't
want
to see
you. It might be where we want to get away from each other. But, no, you know, it really is. It's, you know, the players, you get out there, they get a day, you know, just to get acclimated to it. And they might walk around a little bit. But coaches, I mean, the hay's never in the barn.
Do you guys have anything planned for coaches? I mean, maybe something fun to do just to – take the mind off of football?
No, not too much, just because, you know, we have our routine and, you know, to get everything set up, we travel out there and, you know, the coaches have kind of a set routine on Friday and Saturday and preparing for Sunday.
How are your coaches holding up?
They're doing great.
Good.
They're doing great. Yeah. They've been great. I mean, a lot of interaction with the players and talking and sometimes these times right here can take you to greater places.
Can test you.
Yeah, they can. And it's good, though. It's, you know, like I've always said, it's good to be uncomfortable as a team because, you know, if you protect your spirit, you got a chance for some great things coming. And we've always believed that and always will.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back more with the head coach right here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Longman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, the game this week in London, and you know, with sports psychologists, they always talk about visualizing. As a coach, do you ever visualize how a game is going to go or should go?
Oh, all the time. I think it's so important. And it starts, you know, at the beginning of the week of practice or, you know, even on Monday as you watch the tape and you start to see what they're doing and how you're going to attack them, that visualization starts then. And then you try to paint that image to the players. They do their own. When they're watching tape, they get a feel for how they're going to handle different situations, different rushers, or how they're going to rush. And, yeah, that takes place throughout the week.
Do you have a vision for this game as far as how it's going to go overall?
Yeah.
Tell me.
No. No, I mean, that's the part of it. But it always, you always go through plays and series and mm-hmm. game management things that go all the way throughout. But, you know, yeah, I think that's so important. It always ends up positive. It always ends up when you go through it, because I think that's so important. And, you know, the players see it the same way.
Do you, where did you learn that from? Is that something, I mean, cause, you know, as a coach, I know you've gathered a lot of information over the years. I know how you are. You're like a sponge. Is there anybody in particular that you learned how to do
that? Sure. I think that you talk to multiple people, and then just the influences you've had in your life. I always believe something good's about to happen. I always believe the best is yet to come. I always believe those things, because I know positive thinking won't allow you to do everything, but it will allow you to do everything better than negative thinking will. I do know that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've just always had that mindset, and that's how I approach it. And a lot of our players and coaches do the same.
Offensively, for you guys today, in summary, the importance of the running game, is that right at the top of the list?
It is. I think, you know, to get in a rhythm and play consistent football, you know what, and do whatever it takes to be at our best. And it's to establish the run game. Yeah, that's obviously something that we're putting time into, along with other things. It's just not one area. There's multiple areas that we take a look at and want to improve on, and that happens to be one of them.
Do you also have to talk about your defense to continue to visualize? Because, you know, a lot of people are looking at that last week's game and they're not seeing the improvement. But that, I thought your defense got better. Do you make sure that they continue to see the positives that they did, even in defeat?
Sure. You have to point those things out. And I know that's not what we all want to hear. It comes as a result-driven league. But in that locker room, in those team meetings, they see that. And it's real. I mean, when they see it and what they're accomplished and how it's progressing, they feel it better than anybody else. So when you have those conversations, you build on that. It's a week-to-week league. You know, now we come back, the slate is clean, and we've got another opponent coming up.
So do you come in on Thursday nights and visualize how our show's going
to
go?
Yeah, that's confusing to me, because I never know where you're going on it. But, no, you know what, that part maybe I don't visualize as much.
taking a look at the division, even though you're on three, it's three games in. You've got one team with two wins at the top in the Texans, the Colts. And the Titans are 1-2, and you're 0-3, and you're playing a division opponent. I don't want to say, look, you get so far ahead down the road that you're looking too far ahead, and you take it 1 week at a time. But, I mean, you've got an opportunity still.
We do. I mean, some people look at the big picture and will look and say, all right, let's take a look at the big picture, see where we're at, how we're progressing. You know, but I know that, you know, and sometimes that can be important. But our focus now, we've got enough things that we need to get corrected and get right, that really in our world, it's about today and what we need to get done today and how can we accomplish this to make sure we don't miss anything today. So it's just the world that we live in.
Called putting your blinders on, right?
Yeah.
Right, putting the blinders on. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll wrap it up and talk a little bison. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. All right, let's take a look at the college football ranks. The Bison had a bye week. It's nice to have a bye week after a big win over Iowa.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk to many people up there, but I'm sure they're excited. But they probably moved on, getting ready for this week.
Did you watch the Monday night football game?
No, I did not.
Carson Wentz. I guess it was this past weekend. Carson Wentz got a big victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers.
No, you know, I know he's playing really well. We get a chance to see all the games, and so, you know, you see some of them on cross breakdowns and things like that. But I just know some of the stats they were talking about, that it looks like he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, doing pretty well. And the crazy thing is, when you watch anything about Carson Wentz, they actually go and they show, like, different restaurants and bars across North Dakota. And they're all wearing Wentz Eagles jerseys now.
Oh, I know. It's got to be one of the leading ones, because I think everybody in North Dakota probably has become an Eagles fan.
All right, so North Dakota State this week, they play Illinois State. Did you play against them when you were in college?
No, I didn't. But I know it's been a rival. I think they played them in the championship game a couple of years ago. And that's always been a close game for them. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was homecoming week in Fargo.
It is.
Oh, is it?
I think it is homecoming week. If you had to pick the toughest opponent from your heyday at North Dakota State, the rivalry or the toughest opponent, either one, who would it be?
Well, the big rivalry, obviously, was University of North Dakota. You know, that was a game that the whole state shut down, and people would come from all across from North Dakota and Minnesota, and alumni came. So that was always a big game.
And how'd you fare against them while you were there?
You know what? I think we did pretty well. There was times they played pretty good. I know as a coach or as a player, I probably get called on this, but I think we fared pretty well. And then as a coach, it went back and forth. They had good teams, and they won a national championship.
All right, the Virginia Cavaliers won. Beat Central Michigan 49-35. Now they're 1-3.
So there you go.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll talk to everybody next week, same time, same place.